Hello, Acceleration Nation. On today's Sick Career Podcast, I have a very special guest, Hannah Morgan. She has nearly 300,000 followers on LinkedIn. She is an expert at career advice. We go into lots of debate on some different things. We have different perspectives on some different methods and strategies, but that is the fun part of being in the career search game. There's 135,000 career coaches out there, plus another 1.4 million resume writers, and it's good to talk shop and really to give you some insight and perspective of how the job acquisition really works. So with that, enjoy this episode. But before you do, just remember there are three ways that Kadima Careers can help you accelerate your career. If you like to do stuff on your own, we have a digital course. It is our most affordable option. You can do that, learn all our tricks and strategies, worksheets and templates, and do it on your own. If you're someone who likes to work in a group setting, get access to me on a weekly basis, we have a group coaching offer as well. If you're one of those people who work with a personal trainer at the gym and you want dedicated support to help you get that great job quickly, confidently, with lots more money, we have a personalized coaching service as well called Personalized Job Acquisition Coaching. All that you can check out at KadimaCareers.com. And with that, let's get to the show. Hello, Acceleration Nation, and welcome to another episode of the Sick Career Podcast, where we break down real career advice and guidance for ambitious professionals and separate the bullshit from the truth here. So on today's show, I'm very pleased to have Hannah Morgan on here. She is someone that has nearly 300,000 followers on LinkedIn, and there's a reason for that, because she knows her stuff. Her profile on LinkedIn says she's showing job seekers ways to proactively uncover new opportunities and get discovered. She's a job search strategist, speaker, and trainer, and she's one of LinkedIn's top voices in job search and careers. I found her on LinkedIn. I liked what she had to say. I reached out to her, and Hannah was kind enough to reply. So with that, Hannah, what else should the Acceleration Nation here know about you and your background?
So I've been doing this for a while, and my background started in HR. And I think one of the things that allows me to help job seekers do this job search is that I have served on different angles of the desk. I've worked in HR, where I was recruiting people from the inside. I've done temporary and permanent placement. I work for an outplacement service provider, coaching people and dispelling really great career advice. And I also worked for a nonprofit and providing workshops and training. So I've seen thousands and thousands of job seekers struggle with this. And it doesn't have to be that hard. We just need to get them the right information. And that's what my mission has been.
Awesome. You do give a lot of good information on LinkedIn. I also get your newsletter. What led you to this path? Just talk a little bit about your motivation of a few of those different moves and why you're doing what you're doing now.
So I had no idea that one could have a career helping people with job search. I had known HR, human resources. I worked in a very large company that grew very quickly, so we did a lot of hiring. And then we also were doing some career pathing in around that. So that job ended, and I didn't know what I was going to do next. And a friend said, there's this company that's hiring for outplacement services. You should come talk to them. I'm like, I have no idea what that you're talking about. What is outplacement services? So long story short, I went on the interview, got the job, went for training, and instantly fell in love with this world of really smart people giving great career advice and making a difference in the lives of people. So that was many, many years ago. I don't even want to use a number because I think it's like 20 plus years ago. But I fell in love with that. And I have worked in that capacity ever since because I love providing clarity, helping people find that path that is out there. So I did it on my own. I eventually went out on my own to do it because I wanted to have my own voice in this. I didn't want to have to feel I was using somebody else's material or, you know, whatever. So I love being on my own and doing this.
And you talk about outplacement services. This is how I understand them. And tell me from your perspective if I'm wrong. When a company fires employees or lays off employees or terminates employees, whatever euphemism you want to use, they often will support, quote unquote, support the employee with outplacement services where they get paired with some resume services, some help with their career. Those outplacement service organizations typically market themselves to the companies firing the employees as an opportunity to cover their butt from a litigation perspective and for a low-cost provider. And I see you're nodding your head.
Yes, that is absolutely the case. That's why they do it.
So they are low-cost providers, so they don't pay their coaches, people like you, all that much. And then the good coaches probably decide not to work for the outplacement services and do something on their own and get paid what they're worth.
It's a great place, I will say. It's a great place to cut your teeth. Right, to get started, to learn that. I think the really good coaches do eventually leave there. That's not to say there aren't good people, and that's not to say that the coaching services that you get through outplacement, which a job seeker who's been unemployed by a company doesn't have to pay for, right? So there are some benefits. Not everybody has a budget that will afford them to hire a private coach.
Right, and I think there are great coaches there. I've met a lot of great coaches that usually started there, and then they moved on from there. And another topic I want to hit off on before we go deeper on some other things is there is one item that you shared with me that you said, Alan, I'm not talking about this on the podcast. And that was about resumes. Please share with my audience why you don't want to spend any time on resumes.
Okay. So first of all, there's already a lot of information out there. Second of all, everybody has a different opinion. And I'm going to use the word opinion and emphasize the word opinion when it comes to writing a resume. And third, and most importantly, job seekers already obsess over their resumes and writing them. They spend more time and energy on their resume than any other part of the job search. And I don't want to go there. I want to talk about the stuff that really is important.
We're done with resumes. Just wanted to cover why we're not talking about it. You and I agree. Resumes are not going to make or break the job search. Too many opinions on it. What does make a candidate stand out? What does help a candidate to truly stand out and accelerate their career?
So here's what I know. There are amazingly talented people in all age brackets. So from young to very senior, old, right? So I don't want this to be about age. I want this to be about interest and enthusiasm for the work that you do. There are people, and we've worked beside them, they've been on our team, that just are not into the work that they're doing, right? And because they're not into the work that they're doing, they don't put forth any effort to learn new things, to develop new skills, to look at problems differently. They're just going through the motions. There are those people out there, right? They just want a job to pay the bills. And I get that. That's not who we're talking to here, is it? Because we're talking to the people who are more ambitious. The people that we're talking to have made a difference. They try hard. They care about their occupation. They care about their career. They care about the problems that they are solving, the difference they're making in the world. And that is part of the message that they have to convey. And they can do that through what they post on LinkedIn or other social media. They can do that through the organizations that they are a part of. They can do that through the conferences they attend. There's so many different ways they can be active and involved and concerned about the work that they're doing.
And by expressing those interests and the passion, the intent is then to connect with other people with those interests and passions.
I don't even think it has to be something that we say has to happen. It happens organically. When you are passionate, when you are interested in the work that you are doing, people are attracted to that. It's almost like a magnet. And you find like-minded thinkers. It just happens organically. Now, for those that it doesn't seem to be happening organically, I'll say, listen to the signs. You may have overlooked some of the things that were coming your way. But yes, people find those like-minded thinkers, find those people that share your enthusiasm for the topic. They are out there and they're in there in the, through professional associations, through so many different ways. They are there. We just need to identify them and then connect with them. Develop relationships with them. And those relationships are based on a shared interest, which makes it so much more comfortable, right? When you build a relationship with someone because you both share a passion for whatever it is, you've got that in common. You can talk about that stuff. And so it doesn't become about that other thing that we often hear job seekers say, well, I have to network to find a job. Well, that's a byproduct. If you are proactively connecting with people that you share an interest with, that you are having conversations with people that are thinking and talking about the same stuff you do, then that job search stuff is really easy. You don't need to really even mention it. It comes up in conversation.
Yeah, and I don't even call it networking. I call it building relationships. And I think yes. You mentioned that too. Humans like humans that like the same thing as those humans. It leads to lack of diversity in some sense, but it also leads to connection in other ways.
And can I say one other thing about this whole relationship thing? Oftentimes, relationships that we have personally are just as important, valuable as those relationships we have professionally. Sometimes we do volunteer work in the community, or sometimes we have friends and relatives that we don't necessarily think could help us, but might be able to help shape our career. And I don't want people to think, well, I can only talk to people, and I can only build relationships with people who I know are in my profession. That's not true. It takes a shared interest, and we already have a whole bunch of shared interests with people personally. Let's see if we can have those two worlds collide, our personal yeah. and our professional.
I think that's such an important point. There's so many different ways to meet someone at your kid's soccer game, and you realize that you have a good conversation with them, and you realize that they may also work at a company where you want to work at one day, and you can have coffee with them at some point and say, oh, how is it to work at Viacom? I didn't really know. So yeah, every relationship does not need to be getting a job, does not need to be getting some benefit, but you can also be giving a lot as well.
That's such a super point, because we forget, because we're so self-absorbed, we all are, right? That this is what I need, I got to go get it. That, you know what, people we know need stuff too. And maybe, just maybe, we can be that person that can provide that help, that assistance, that resource. We have different circles of friends and different connections. If I can help introduce you to somebody, I'm all for that. And sometimes we have to ask. One of my favorite things that happened when I started doing a lot more networking, I don't love networking, but having conversations with people, is that people started asking me this question, and there are variations of it, but you know, you've been so helpful and gracious with your time to do today. Is there anything that I can do to help you?
Yes, I love that question. I always tell people to ask like that, and it overwhelms me how often that the person receiving that. So you might have asked me to have a conversation about like, oh, I'd love to know how it is to work at Google. So I'm telling them all advice about that. And then at the end, they ask me, what can I do to help you? Through the law of reciprocity that Robert Cialdini talks about, at the very least, it just endears more connection and more support.
And oh, by the way, if I'm the person asking that question and I've just gotten a whole bunch of great information from somebody, it makes me feel good to know that I can at least try to do something for this person that was so helpful and gracious in giving their time and information.
Yeah. Have you always felt comfortable reaching out to connect with people? No. Do you feel like you're more the person that's reaching out, or the more person more often being reached out to, or is it about half and half?
So I think as I have developed or grown in my career, the tables have flipped a little. I will easily confess I'm an introvert. So you will never or very seldom find me going to those large conferences and networking events. I do them once in a while, but I'm really not comfortable. My preference is to do the smaller one-on-one conversations because I can manage that. I can do the research I need to do on the person. I can feel more comfortable. I don't think I've ever really been all that comfortable reaching out to somebody, but I have found if there's something that I can offer in advance, like, you know, I think you might be interested in some information I have. Would you be willing to spend some time with me and answer some of my questions also? That for me feels a little bit more comfortable than I'm looking for information. Can I pick your brain? Which feels very needy, greedy. I don't think anybody loves reaching out. And I think that that's an important point for us to make, because people don't like networking or reaching out, having conversations with people, and they think that they're unusual. They think there's something wrong, or they think they can't do it because it's against every fiber of their being. But it's not comfortable, I think, for most people. Is it comfortable for you?
It is for me, but it's taken a while.
Tell them how you got to the point where it got comfortable for you.
I think once I saw all the benefit that it had, I kept getting reinforced that people are generally good. I think early on in my career, my parents probably said, oh, speak to this person to get some advice about how to get into baseball. Or it was, I think, also a social worker that I went to that was kind of like helping me with my career, of encouraging me to think about where I wanted to go in my career. And then we talked about baseball and sports analytics. And then he encouraged me to think about who knows people in that space and start reaching out. And I reached out to a lot of people. I called the Milwaukee Brewers front office, and the general manager at the time, I think Sal Bando, picked up the phone. That was unusual, but I think encouragement from people around me. And then as I had those conversations and realizing the benefit that it had, it just reinforced itself. And also, I think something that you mentioned earlier, that when people come out like to ask me for advice, I like it. People generally like to give advice.
Yeah, it feels good, right? To have somebody ask you. It's a little flattering. But I think it's so important to say, you know, that outreach is not comfortable for a lot of people. And don't let that be the obstacle that prevents you from doing it. How often have I said, fake it till you make it? You know what you're going to say, write it out, get the conversation going. It's not as bad as it seems once you get going.
And I think it was a great point that you made, that you're not necessarily comfortable in big settings like a conference or an event or something like that. But one-on-one conversations are really helpful as well. And it's almost more efficient if you're doing it virtually like we're doing here. Because if we were at an event, we might not have found each other. And if you're at an event, you might get stuck talking to someone who is just talking your ear off and not sharing anything interesting, and you're just looking for an out. So it's actually more efficient and effective, and I find the conversations to be better in a one-on-one setting.
Absolutely. I think where the challenge is for those people who have a very small network, right? They don't have a lot of people that they know. They need to expand. They need to meet more people. And that takes either going to conferences or events, or it takes asking your friends and family and the people that you know for introductions to people. Who would you recommend that I speak with? If you have a very small network, I think getting those recommendations at the end of every call is another thing that you have to ask in every call. Who else would you recommend I speak with to learn more about what we were just talking about?
Yes, that's another great question. And that usually spurs, especially if I find you're more specific. So if I'm meeting with someone at Pfizer, you could be like, hey, I'm really interested in looking at a job at Pfizer, but I'm also looking at Merck and Eli Lilly and Novartis and Johnson & Johnson. Do you know anything about those companies? And that might spur in their mind that they know, oh, I know George at J&J. He's a good guy. I'd be happy to make an introduction. Or sometimes you can ask within the walls there, if you're talking to Pfizer, like who else within the organization would it make sense for me to perhaps chat with? And then you start branching out there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We never know enough people, right? We need a bigger circle.
Yes. And you have quite a big one on LinkedIn with nearly 300,000. Talk about that a little bit. So you have a lot of people following you, and you can't have 300,000 connections. LinkedIn limits it at 30,000. So I'm sure you have a different perspective on connections and followers. But how have you used LinkedIn to build relationships with individuals?
I think so much of my good luck was being at the right place at the right time and being an early adopter. So one of the things that I learned early in my developing my own voice and business here was I need to partner, create an alliance with people who are doing the same kind of work that I'm doing that already have an established presence. And that's what I did. We started before I was on, well, maybe about the same time I was on LinkedIn, but I was part of a blogging collaborative effort, and a bunch of career coaches and resume writers that were all very well established and very well thought of, we all cross-post up on our blogs and wrote comments on each other's blog posts for traffic. So that was how I got my start. And that allowed me to understand how to build relationships on LinkedIn, because it's the exact same thought process. Hang with those people that are doing great things. See what they are saying on LinkedIn. Comment on their posts on LinkedIn. Not just once, Not just twice, a couple of times. And by that point, your name will be in their head. So when you do reach out to connect, they will know who you are. They've seen your name, they've seen your comments. I think a lot of times people on LinkedIn just go straight for the, all right, let's connect. It's like asking to somebody to sleep with them on the first date. You don't do that. You gotta build up to that. And that's what we want to really replicate on LinkedIn is, okay, there's this person that I've just seen writing great stuff or talking about really interesting stuff. Let me get to know them. Let me get in their feed so that then I can connect with them. And they're much more likely to say yes if they know your name.
So that's an interesting perspective. I take a different approach with my clients and the way I've done it. And the reason why is I don't find that a lot of hiring managers often post on LinkedIn. I was a hiring manager. The way I used LinkedIn before I started Kadima is very different than how I'm using it now. So there wouldn't be a lot of time for people to interact with my post. And frankly, if they interact with my post, I'd be like, thanks. As a hiring manager, I wouldn't be posting again for another 2 months.
Right,
So,
absolutely.
yeah. So what I generally say, like, I'm actually okay. I don't call it like sleeping with them on the first date to ask for the connection. I find like when people ask me for like review or resume, I was like, I don't even know you.
Right.
But I actually encourage people to send those connection requests out because, especially for the hiring managers, like the people that you and I post a lot, and people, like if I want to get in front of Gary Vaynerchuk, I'll be commenting on his, like he hasn't ever replied back to me.
I had a conversation online with Gary back in the day
Yeah.
when he was just getting started.
But that's how you would get through to someone like them. Like, I think the way you and I connected, I probably was comment. I forget exactly how. I think I might have
You
heard you on the
commented. You
podcast.
commented.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
So,
Commenting
what do you
is good.
recommend people do with hiring managers? Just reach out cold?
What I recommend is people first identify the companies that they want to work at, and ideally a list of 40. Then find out that commonality, which you referred to also. So, did they go to the same school as me? Did they grow up in the same town as me? Did they work at the same company as me? And say, Ohio Wesleyan, if you find someone from Ohio Wesleyan that now work at Google and you reach out to them, you don't say, hey, I want to work at Google. But you say, hey, I see you went to Ohio Wesleyan. I love connecting with former alumni. And you say something, I don't know, what's some quirky thing about Ohio Wesleyan?
Did you ever have wings at the Little Brown Jug?
Exactly.
The Little Brown Jug is a bar that everybody went to, and they had wing night, and it was really fun.
right. You could just say, like, I was talking to my friends about,
Or
like,
not say that.
yeah. And if you connect
That's
with
what I
them,
would
like,
say.
great, like, I went to Binghamton, so if someone referred to the Rat, like the Rat Scholar was like a big bar, the Rat, that would probably most likely get a response from me. So, like, the way your face is shining from talking about this wing shop is like, we'll get that commonality. But I think our points are similar. I think if you
Yes.
want to connect with someone, you can't go for the jugular right away. You got to kind of warm them up.
So let me use an example. My son, who is a senior now in college, who doesn't listen to anything I ever say. He does everything on his
Yeah.
own, right? They know all the answers. What do I know about job search? So he created his own LinkedIn profile, didn't ask me for any help, and then he just went through to the Gettysburg school page and started connecting with hundreds of alumni, just asking them. I don't even think he customized or personalized his connection request. He just started connecting with alumni. And his headline said that he was a student athlete at the name of his school, right? So it was very clear who he was if they saw his headline. So out of all of those people, almost everybody accepted his
Yeah.
invitation to connect because there is that bond with alumni, right? So
Yeah. And especially if it's a smaller school, like if you're sending it from Ohio State, you might not get, or like you might have to customize it a little bit.
yeah.
But for smaller schools, like, yeah, anyone who'll connect for me from Binghamton, I was like, awesome. I'd love to connect with you.
Right, absolutely. Do you still get connection requests from people that are looking to connect with alumni? Because I very seldom get those.
I rarely do.
I'm
And
surprised.
actually, well, the two schools that I went to, Binghamton undergrad, Columbia Business School, grad school, they have their own systems, which are terrible. And
Right.
MentorMatch is one of them, and the other one is some other third party. And I always tell people, just connect with me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll come over there because I don't check those platforms. Like, why establish another platform if LinkedIn does it all?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I wish more students would connect with me. I'd be happy to
Yeah.
do that, right? So if you went to OWU and you're listening to this, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to.
You talk a little bit about, what do you call it? Personal marketing.
We're talking about LinkedIn and making an impression on LinkedIn, right? And so want me to go ahead with that? Because I think the other thing that people don't understand is how to build a good profile. And again, there's lots of information out there, so I don't think we need to like go deep into this. But if you take 2 seconds to read some of the great articles out there, watch some of the great videos, good quality videos from people that really know what they're talking about, right? It's not rocket science. You want your profile to do a good job representing you. And if you're doing that right, and you've got a resume and you've got a LinkedIn profile, the two work really well together. You have to have a LinkedIn profile. It's on 24/7. We know that talent acquisition and recruiters will search for people using LinkedIn. And so if we don't have a good LinkedIn profile, they're not going to find us.
What are some of those key aspects that people should be thinking about from your perspective of making a good LinkedIn profile so that recruiters or talent acquisition can find you?
Yeah, so definitely the headline is super, super important. In that headline, you should speak to the skills, the type of role that you're looking for, future focused, right? If you never want to do whatever your role was, don't say that you're transitioning out of being this to something else. Focus on what you're looking to do next, an aspiring whatever, or just whatever you want to do. Some of the reasons why you're going to be really great at that job, and those could vary. That could be technical skills that you have or hard skills. It could be a degree or a certification that has positioned you to be really well suited for that role. Maybe there's some other added benefit or interesting accomplishment that you've had in the field. Never in there do you need to list your current employer. I just was looking at working with a guy on his profile, and a lot of the information space in his headline was taken up with the name of his current employer. I'm like, you don't need to have that in there. So a headline's super important to have it encapsulate what you do. Keywords, right? We know that LinkedIn is an online database, and we want to use words, terminology that recruiters, talent acquisition would be searching for the kinds of jobs that we're looking for. That's not hardworking. That's not dedicated. Those aren't the traits that oftentimes people use. So in that headline, put those good words, the strong keywords that we know are in job postings, the hard skills that recruiters are looking for. Another section that's important is the about section that I oftentimes see people leave blank because they don't know what to say. It's the answer in an interview to tell me about yourself. If someone said, hey, tell me about yourself, type it out. Put that in your about section. It's better than leaving it blank. Again, keywording is important, making sure you're using the right terminology. And I think a lot of times, the other area that I think people skimp out on, don't pay enough attention to, is under the experience, under each job. Sometimes I don't see anything. They don't list that they did. They list the company and the job title, but they don't explain what they did in that job. So I think that it's important to have good meat in that experience section. One of the things I tell people too is, you know, your resume and your LinkedIn profile aren't exactly the same for many reasons, but more importantly, because you have unlimited space almost on LinkedIn. So one of the things that you know every talent acquisition recruiter is looking for is they're looking at your LinkedIn profile is, why was this important? Why was this role important to their career development? Right? Why don't we tell them right up front why this role was important to my career development? Lead that. And then you can talk about what you achieved and what you were responsible for. But tell the recruiter, I was promoted to this role for the first time because of my ability to develop relationships and blah, 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 blah. And I developed skills and blah, 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 blah. Right? Tell people why that role was important. So those are the three things that I think are minimally super important for job seekers to focus on.
So during your career, have you ever had the LinkedIn recruiter license? Like the recruiter license is quite expensive. It's like $10,000 a year.
I think. It's super expensive. I've seen people show what goes on behind the curtain, as I think you have too, right? You've seen behind the curtain. Oh, did you use it?
So when I was at Tableau, I complained to the head of recruiting there that we weren't getting enough diverse candidates. I complained to multiple people before I got to the head of recruiting. And by the time I got to him, he's like, well, we don't have the resources to find diverse talent, but I can give you a LinkedIn recruiter license and you can go find them yourself. I was like, Well, okay, you're shirking your responsibility, but cool. I was always wanted to see it. So great. So I had a license for about a year there before we got acquired by Salesforce, and they wound up cutting down the licenses
Oh.
of the $10,000. But the way I used it and the way I've always used it with recruiters is when I've developed a search, when I sat down with a recruiter, I was a hiring manager. I sat down with a recruiter who was going to reach out to talent. I would always tell them, either they asked me or I told them, they would often ask me, what companies do you want to target here? And so I would start with the companies. Then they would say, what titles do you want me to target? Then I would say, program manager, senior program manager, customer success, whatever. They'd say, depending on how early stage of the role was, they might have said, what schools do you care that they went to? And I'd give them like either a list of schools or say, hey, pick the HBCUs and the Ivies and these schools. I would say years of experience. And that's what I would give them. So when you and others advise, like, because I'm actually give people different advice, and I say, don't worry about the skills that you list there. You can put them on there, but don't worry about that. I don't put as much effort into the headline except to create a headline that meshes well to the role that you're trying to seek. And not just that you seek, but that you've done before. So if you're a program manager, say that you're a program manager in your headline. If you're a program manager who wants to go into product manager, I say do not put aspiring product manager in there because no one's gonna like hire you for that because they're looking at what you've done before and you have not done product management. So the way that the search is done, I find if you don't have the right companies, you don't have the right titles, you don't have the right years of experience, also location, we would look for
Yeah,
location as
right.
well. And school sometimes, the recruiter's not going to find you in the first place.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Here's the counterpoint to that though, and I love your logic 'cause and I agree with that, and knowing what you know from behind the recruiting screen is really important. I will say the vast majority of LinkedIn users, recruiters, will not have access to LinkedIn
LinkedIn
recruiting.
recruit.
However, they will still be searching for a lot of those same fields because LinkedIn allows them to search for those fields, job title, all that stuff.
That's interesting. And my hunch is that the top companies, like a Salesforce, like a Goldman Sachs, like a Pfizer, they probably do have lots of people in their organization that have those recruiter licenses. So when you're getting reached out to, you're probably might be like going back to like the hitting on and asking for people to go home with you on the first date. I also find the inbound that you get on LinkedIn is often like some drunk bastard that's hitting on you at a bar. So usually that inbound that you get is often pretty bad. Like none of my jobs have come cold, like have been cold inbound. I've gotten far with a couple of interviews, but it didn't like I wind up not wanting it. But I find all these companies that come for me are not all that attractive. I got to go find the attractive ones. It's kind of how I find my wife too. Like she didn't hit on
Right?
me, I found her.
Of course you did. And that's one of the things that I hope job seekers can learn to do rather than just looking at, waiting for the opportunity to hit them over the head or hoping that they find something posted on LinkedIn's job board. I want people to be, and I'm sure you talk about that, you do, because you talk about the target companies and having at least 40 of those, right? That's where the magic happens. That then drives the activity. And one of the reasons I love having target companies and talk to job seekers about it all the time is because then I am in control. Like, as the job seeker, I'm in control. I don't have to wait for a job to be posted. I could go have conversations with anyone in that company that I'm interested in today.
Exactly. Oh, and one other thing we looked at as a recruiter, I did this when I was at a smaller shop called Andela. We looked for people that had interest in our company as well. So you can indicate that you're interested in that company. It didn't matter for Google because they assume everybody cares about Google. But if you're at a smaller company, like when I was at Datadog or Andela, Datadog's bigger now, but it was small when I was working there. If you find someone that's interested in Datadog, they could be a potentially interesting candidate for you.
And LinkedIn's added some additional feature around that whole show interest. And I'm not sure it's going to actually stick around all that much. But even just that simple thing that you talked about, I mean, show that I'm interested in this company, follow them, follow the company.
Yeah, exactly. So when did you start in this career support, career Sherpa space? I would love to
2010.
2010. What have been some of the big changes over the last 13 years that you've seen?
Let me just tell you, as much as things have changed, they haven't changed that much.
Yeah.
It's been very cyclical. So there are fads, things come and go. When I first started, LinkedIn really wasn't that big of a thing in 2010. When did LinkedIn come into the scene? 2008, maybe?
2003, it started. I joined on April 1st, 2004. I know that because I looked it up recently. Yeah, but anyway.
I think I had a profile, but nobody was really using it. So LinkedIn really wasn't a thing. It's so much bigger and better today than it was back then. And so that whole concept of networking was really, really hard back in the day. There was no good way to find people online. I don't think LinkedIn let you search really well. So that was really tough. The other thing that I think has changed is the whole automation. Applicant tracking systems were around, but they weren't really mainstream yet. I don't think that ATSs have changed the process necessarily, because I think a lot of people believe that ATSs are weeding out resumes, and they're not. They're just a filing system for resumes, an archiving system. Recruiters are still looking at resumes. I'm not going to say they're looking at everyone, but they're looking at a lot of them. But I think there was always a misunderstanding of how applicant tracking systems worked. And that sort of got really big, that misunderstanding, and the marketing around that big understanding became a big deal. The biggest thing was, everybody saw this happen, was working remotely. And now the pay transparency. Those have been the two biggest, most exciting changes I've seen in the last number of years. And the ones that I think have the greatest benefit to individuals, job seekers.
Awesome. Well, we can go on and on about this, and we should probably have a follow-up episode, but we don't have all day here. My listeners don't have all the time. I find that when I have really long episodes, we get less listeners. So let's make sure that this is short, sweet, and to the point. And with that, I have two last questions for you, Hannah. What is one last piece of sick career advice that you want to leave the Sick Career Podcast audience with?
Take control of your career. Be proactive, not just when you need a job, but before you need a job. But even in the job search, be proactive, not reactive.
And we always like to say, own your career here.
Yeah.
The last question actually, let me ask two, because I like this other question that Lenny from Lenny's podcast asks. How can people help you? Are there ways that people can help you?
That's such a great
question.
Either
me or others out there that are listening to this, are there ways that
you know, if you're
help
listening to me for the first time and you hadn't heard of me before, if you would consider following me on LinkedIn, that would be great. I know I'm not connected to everybody, right? And so I think the greatest thing that you could do for me is follow me if this resonates with you, if this works for you, if you're interested in new perspectives.
Awesome. And for folks at home, LinkedIn does limit the number of connections we can have. So I'm also like a little bit particular about who I connect with, because they do limit that, but they do not limit the followers. The other thing, which I think you probably hinted at here, the last question, how can people find you? And I think you already gave it away.
Yeah. So LinkedIn, Hannah Morgan, I'm there. I have a website, careersherpa.net. I love Twitter back in the day, now that it's X and all the stuff that's going on there. I'm there, but whatever. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Threads, wherever. So I'm all over social, whatever your preference is, like go look for Career Sherpa.
Awesome, Hannah. Well, this was such a fun conversation. I learned a lot from you. I like to have some good inside baseball debate here, and really appreciate you and your time. So thank you.
Thank you. Really a pleasure. Thanks.